Interesting.
Eloise is not here, but I believe everyone else.
Okay. Let's skip over item one. Yeah, for now, we can do that at the end of the meeting. And move to item two, approval of the minutes for the September 24th, 2020 meeting.
Motion to approve the prior minutes.
Is there a second?
Reverend Cousins, second.
The motion having been made by Trustee Nunez and seconded by Trustee Cousin. Are there any comments on the minutes? All right, all those in favor, Trustee Cousins?
Yes.
Trustee Cannon?
Yes.
Trustee McDermott?
Yes.
Trustee Nunez? You're on mute.
Yep, yes.
And I am a yes. The minutes pass. Item number three, administrative matters, item A.
For item A, we have Rich Stitch from Hooker and Holcomb. He can kind of explain it a little more. There's a potential of an extra cost totaling $5,000, $2,500 for each fund. That has to do with the auditors with the city and the GASB report. Rich, can you explain a little further?
Sure, happy to. Each year when we do a GASB report, GASB 6768, we project from the last evaluation. That's the standard procedure, so to speak. In between valuations, a new mortality table came out in early 2019. A mortality table came out. We're actually going to be in the process this year of doing an experience study to evaluate which version of the table is appropriate for the police and fire plan. It's possible the auditors may come back and may require us to redo the numbers using a new table. So that would mean us going back to the last valuation, the July 1-18 valuation, and redoing it on a new mortality table.
So I think we at the SURF meeting, the trustees voted on it. If it came to that, if the trustees were okay with the additional cost of the $2,500. So I believe we would need to do a vote as well.
I appreciate that. I presume we don't have a choice. If you have to redo the numbers, you have to redo the numbers, right?
Exactly.
I think the auditors are, independent auditors are in the catbird seat on that.
Any questions? No, for the record that Trustee Ribeiro has joined us. Good to see you. Any questions on this item?
Just one. What's the major difference in the two versions?
Just the new set of tables is specific to the public sector, which is the first time they've ever issued and done a study specific to the public sector. So there's actually a variety of different tables. There's actually one for public safety. There's one for teachers and one for general employees, along with several different versions of each. So typically for a plan of your size, we like to evaluate and figure out which version fits best. So that's really our analysis that we're scheduled to do and we're actually doing now. But the auditors are going to want a GASB report now. So those are based on the prior val, which is the old mortality table.
So what factors are better for us? Longer lives?
These are longer lifespans, correct.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Trustee Cannon. Any other questions here? So we're looking for a vote, Leanna, to permit Hooker and Holcomb to do an additional assessment. Should they need to, is that correct?
Yeah, it would be to approve the $2,500 cost if it gets to that.
Okay. Would anybody like to make that motion?
I'll make the motion for Hooker and Holcomb to check with our auditors and determine what version we have to follow, and if it includes a $2,500 fee to initiate that also.
Second.
Thank you, Trustee Cannon, for making the motion, and Trustee Nunez for seconding it. Any additional discussion? Trustee Ribeiro, how do you vote?
Yes.
Trustee Cousin?
Yes.
Trustee Cannon?
Yes.
Trustee McDermott?
Yes.
Trustee Nunez?
Yes.
And I am a yes, that item passes. Item number 3B.
So that this is Carolyn Cohn, and that has to do with an update on how we were going to address this issue regarding Section 202 of the 1957 Special Act. And just to remind everybody, that section required that the pension board submit annually an estimate of its expenses to the mayor, and then the mayor forward that to the Board of Alders, and that that be included in the city's budget. As you may recall, the history has been that and Hooker and Holcomb takes the prior, every 2 years they do a valuation report. It's as of the last day of the fiscal year, so that the last one they did was as of June 30th, 2018. They look at the actual expenses of the pension board for that year. And then for the following 2 years of the city's budget, they take that amount and they add in an inflation factor. Because that didn't comply strictly with this Section 202, we had a small group, and it was comprised of Mike Gormany, myself, Leanna, Jerry, Rich and Dan from Hooker and Holcomb, and representatives from the Corporation Counsel's office. And we came up with a suggestion that we'd ask the board to adopt, and which that is as follows. The Hooker and Holcomb's in the process of compiling the evaluation report as of June 30th, 2020. That will include all of the expenses of the board through that date for the prior fiscal year. That amount plus an inflationary factor would be presented to the board in January 2021 with an itemization of what those expenses were. If that amount was acceptable to the board, that would go to the mayor's office. It would be included in the budget. I believe Mr. Gormany would set out in his attachment to the Board of Alders a list of what those expenses were. And then hopefully the Board of Alders would adopt that as part of their budget. So that's our suggestion. And we'd ask the board to adopt it.
Questions? Mr. Cam.
I'll defer to Evelise Ribeiro, please. She had her hand up first.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see it.
Thank you. Question, if these are expenses that end on June 30th, why would we have to wait until January of the following year, 6 months later, to approve it? And is that going to be the schedule for every year, or is this just a one-time schedule?
So to answer the last question, I think it would be our procedure every year. So we would be approving it in January because that's when Hooker and Holcomb's report would be done, because that's they're going to do the report for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2020, in December of 2020. And that's when I guess the city has all the information as to what those individual expenses are. But that's why an inflationary factor is added onto those expenses. And then it goes in the following year's city budget. I know it seems sort of convoluted the way I'm explaining it, but.
I'm sorry, I have a follow-up question. So my follow-up question would be this process in policy that you're proposing that we adopt. I mean, is this in written form? Something that we can see?
I could write it up for the next meeting if that makes it clearer. And Rich, I think you had something you wanted to explain about it.
Oh, I just wanted to explain. So the July 1 or June 30th, 2020 valuation determines the contributions for the 2022 and 2023 fiscal years. So it's a projection of expenses for upcoming fiscal years.
But isn't it something that we're paying for the prior fiscal year, or am I misunderstanding?
So it's a projection for the future fiscal years based upon what's been paid in the prior fiscal year plus an inflationary factor. And we could try it for 1 year and see if it worked, and if that wasn't satisfactory, you know, this doesn't, it's not, we can change it.
If I may.
Trustee Ruberry, you look dissatisfied.
I'm going to wait and listen to others and respond if I have further comments. Thank you.
Trustee Cannon.
I'm opposed to this non-trustee committee formulating what we're going to approve. I believe we have it in past meetings where this procedure that we had in writing was not followed properly. I believe we should stop what we're doing wrong and adhere to the rule that's in the bylaws or charter, of how we conduct this issue. I understand what the actuary is saying. I understand what the lawyer is saying, but they're basically cleaning up something that was not followed properly. I believe this board should get back involved and follow this correctly. And then if we're going to make changes in the future, once we correct this, then we can do that. And I think that may fall in line with some of the questions that Trustee Ribeiro might be going at.
Well, I don't understand, Trustee Cannon. What is your proposal of how this would be done correctly?
Well, Trustee Elicker, this was an outline that has never been followed properly. I believe that we should get back to following it properly once it's been discovered that it hasn't been done correctly. I'm not pointing fingers at anyone. I just want to get back to what was originally drawn up. We follow that. We're not going to base it on projections of expenses 2 years down the road. That's where we get caught. Our expenses are enormous at times. We come into many different issues, as we've all witnessed in the last 10 months. And prior to the 10 months, just before you came on, Trustee Elicker, we had large legal bills due to some questionable legal issues. And it just, there's no way to forecast that, to go 2 years out or to do a projection on it. So the original, I believe Carolyn Cohn is on record saying that she didn't follow the proper procedure 2 meetings ago. It's in the minutes. And what I'd like to do is just to get back to have this board of trustees get back to doing it correctly before we send it out to a committee for them to figure out how to go forward.
Trustee Cohen or Rich, can you talk about the complications of paying this on an ongoing way?
So what we're required to do under this special act is we have to submit annually to the mayor prior to the 1st of September a schedule of the estimated expenses. So the question is, how do we come up with this schedule of estimated expenses? And if what we're suggesting is doing it based on the past with an inflationary factor. If in fact the board feels that they want to come up with a budget for next year's fiscal year, that's fine too. I mean, that's the board's choice.
I'm unclear about this as well. So if we come up with the budget, we propose to the Board of Alders to approve that budget, and we go above that budget, what happens?
I assume the city doesn't pay the expenses.
Or we have to go to the Board of Alders again mid-year to ask for a transfer.
Right.
And so what you're suggesting is another way is I don't know, I have it in mind how kind of estimated taxes are done, where you look at your last year and get a sense of what you're likely to pay in this coming year. You're suggesting that's another way to do this in a legal way, where we would not have to change the budget mid-year, because we would have an accurate estimate of what the expenses would be based on past expenses.
You know, this is the way it's been done as long as anyone can remember, which is to look at the prior year's expenses. This is the way Hooker and Holcomb has done it in the past. Look at the prior year's expenses and add an inflationary factor for the following 2 years, fiscal years. And then it gets added into the ADAC, which is the city's contribution to the pension fund. And it seems to have worked very successfully for many, many years. And what I'm suggesting is that number, instead of it going directly from Hooker and Holcomb to your office and then to the Board of Alders, that number come to the board. And if the board in January feels that number is not a good number, the board can change it or amend it and send it on to your office with a different number. But that would be the number we would start with, rather than coming up with a line-by-line budget, you know, having the administrative people do that.
In the scenario that the Board of Alders significantly reduces the number, how does that impact our operations?
You know, I don't know, because that really has never been the case. As far as I know, the board has accepted the ADEC, which has this as a component, a very small component. The ADEC is quite large. You know, it's $35 million. So,
Trustee Rivera, I saw your hand raised.
Yes. So, for me, I mean, I would feel more comfortable adopting this proposed process if it was in written form, where it's made clear, to Trustee Cannon's point, what is the difference from what we currently have that, you know, may or may not have been followed versus what is proposed. So, there's no confusion as to what exactly we're voting on, and that if things don't go according to what you propose, that we're clear and that we'll know how to make further decisions. So that's what my unreadiness is regarding this issue.
I think that's a good idea.
That seems quite reasonable to me as well. So Trustee Rivera's proposal is that we continue the item, and then next meeting, Carolyn, you can share prior to the meeting a written process that we can review before.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Does anybody else have any comments or discussion on this item before we move on? So is there a motion to continue this item?
I move to table the item 3B, update on payment of administrative expenses.
Second.
There's a motion to table by Trustee Rivera and a second by Trustee Cannon. Trustee Rivera, how do you vote?
Yes.
Cousin?
Yes.
Trustee Cannon?
Yes.
Trustee McDermott?
Yes.
Trustee Nunez?
Yes.
I am a yes as well. So the item is tabled. Item number 3C, Robbins and Geller. Robbins, Geller, Rudman, and Dowd, LLP report, information only.
As you recall, the last two meetings, I've asked the both funds, Police and Fire and Surf, have law firms that are used in the event that the funds suffer a loss on investments due to unethical business practices that are conducted by the companies that are investing the money. And that those usually involve class action lawsuits, where the other pension plans that are also involved in those investments will collectively seek litigation and go after these firms to recover. In most cases, it's just a percentage of what the losses were. Now, I've had Levitan Sucklow present to both boards at the last two meetings a report because they're one of the law firms that does this. The funds have two law firms that do it, Leviton Sokolow, and the firm that's here today is Robbins, Geller, and Rudman. And they basically do a due diligence on the part of the trustees as the fiduciaries that are required to do everything within their power to try to recover as much of these lost assets as possible. And at the last meeting, I was a little concerned because in one quarter alone, each fund, police and fire and surf, it appeared that suffered approximately $200,000 loss each, approaching $400,000 in investments that had some nefarious activity involved with it. Leviton presented to the trustees at the last meeting. I've asked Robbins, Geller, and Bergman to present today in the person of Laura Stein and Bill Cavanaugh to review some of the figures they have on recoveries for the Police and Fire Fund, and also for you to become familiar with them, since they are involved with pursuing police and fire loss of assets. That being the case, I'd like to turn it over to Laura Stein and to Mr. Cavanaugh.
Thank you, Mr. Segnella, and thank you, Board of Trustees, Mr. Mayor, plan professionals, Mr. Ambersley. Really appreciate your time, and we want to be cognizant of your busy agenda, so we'll be brief, but please interrupt us with any questions you might have. We are a 200-person, 300-staff law firm. We are a very large operation. We've recovered over $60 billion in the years that we've been working in this field. To date, we've still prosecuted the largest recovery for defrauded shareholders, the Enron litigation. And that's all we do, is pursue corporate misconduct. So publicly traded companies that you've invested in that have engaged in fraud, we go after them and try to recover money back for you, the shareholders. And our monitoring program is an alert system that tells you if your portfolio was affected by any of this misconduct. And every month we report to Mr. Segnella and Ms. Ambersley on a email system advising them case by case whether your fund has been affected and to exactly what dollar. And from 2008 to 2019, we actually filed those claims as well. And I have some figures that Mr. Segnella asked me to calculate for you. And we're pleased to report that we were able to recover $115,000 for the PNF fund in claims that were owed back to the fund. And that was a service that we were asked to revise in 2019. This is the Excel spreadsheet that Ms. Ambersley's put up here. And it shows a listing of all the cases and all the recoveries that were distributed. In 2019, the board made a decision to actually revert to a simple alert system where we now report to you only information, and we do not file the claims any longer. Your custodial bank now files those claims, from my understanding. But the alert system is still very valuable, and we have given you an early warning system through what's called a portfolio monitoring report. And every month we follow every case filed by every law firm and what exactly that means to your trading portfolio and whether you've been affected and to what dollar amount. And we give a summary of that case. And also that month, we tell you about every case filed that has settled. And if you have a claim in that case, and that list is used by your custodial bank, and it's on its side, so it's hard to read, but it tells you that this report is a checklist for you to work off of to collect what you're owed. So this is a assets of the fund that you're able to collect and maximize your recovery. And I really want to open it up to any questions you might have. I promise to be brief, but I want you to know that you have resources that we're putting behind to make sure that you're getting the most back that you can in these situations. Unless, Bill, do you have anything to add?
No. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Good morning, trustees. Thanks very much for the opportunity to be here. I really don't have anything to add. I mean, I think you laid it out, you know, very well, what we do. I do think if any of the trustees have any questions at all, now would be a great time, you know, to ask. We're happy to add any color to any of the background information that Laura has provided. So please, please feel free to do so.
I think if I could just add, Bill and Laura, the trustees' education that there is no upfront fees charged by either firm, that if a case is settled, there's usually a provision of a certain amount that goes to the law firm out of the proceeds that are settled. So there's no, you won't see any bills upfront from either of these law firms being on the agenda for payment.
Yes, sir. That's correct. All the firms in our industry work on a contingency basis. So we put our money where our mouth is. We front the costs and the time in these cases. And if they're successful, the leader of the case suggests to the court what an appropriate fee would be, and the judge approves that fee. But there's only a fee if the case is successful. So there are no fees for your fund out of pocket. It's only if we're able to recover any money for the entire class that a fee is then awarded to the attorneys, whoever is prosecuting the case. And about a third of the time, our firm is leading these cases. We're consistently ranked among the top three firms in the industry.
And what's an approximate amount of settlement that the law firm usually receives on the recovered assets?
As of late, it's in the 20% range.
I think so far, my recollection, correct me if I'm wrong, the only time one of the New Haven pension firms that plans has been asked to be a lead litigant in any case was when we went after A&P.
That's correct.
That was a surfer, yeah. Wasn't it? Wasn't that?
Yes. Yes. That was back in 2008. Mm-hmm. A while ago, mm-hmm. A $9 million recovery. Mm-hmm. It was a financial fraud of the grocery store chain. Mm-hmm. And you were the lead plaintiff because you were distinctly affected by it and decided to take an active role in it. And mm-hmm. And that should be a rare occurrence where you're uniquely affected disproportionately financially. And when the board decides to just step up and take an active role. And we pride ourselves on making those recommendations in a rare and conservative fashion. Mm-hmm. We work with almost 1,000 institutional investors, many in Connecticut and New England, that you would know the names of. And we feel that that gives us a perspective of when it will be appropriate for your funds to consider that role. It's the calculus is based on the largest financial interest. So we're able to really give you a perspective of how your loss is relative to other institutional investors. And therefore, it will be a rare occurrence that your fund would want to consider an active role. But when you want to, we're poised to do it. We have the litigation resources and former federal prosecutors and SEC attorneys that are ready to help litigate these cases. We've brought more cases to trial than any other law firm in our field.
So again, I just wanted the trustees to meet you because they met the representative of the other firm so they understand exactly what's being done. And this is to protect them because as fiduciaries to the fund, if we didn't do this to try to recover this money, we would be subject to some pretty big lawsuits ourselves.
Well, I think you've got yourselves well protected. You've got two great firms watching over this part of your portfolio. As fiduciaries, you're pursuing these claims, which are assets of the fund. And if you ever wanted to take an active role, you've got attorneys ready and poised to do that for you. So we're honored to be of service and we appreciate the opportunity. Thank you for your time this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions from the trustees? I see Trustee Cannon has a question.
Number one, I just want to reiterate, I believe that you guys do this no fees towards us. And with that, I just want to thank you for what you do for us.
Thank you, Trustee Cannon.
Thank you, Trustee Cannon. Appreciate it very much.
Any other questions from the trustees? All right, and since this item is information only, we can move on to the next item, which is...
Thank you very much.
Item number D, item 3D, Northern Trust Resolution.
Yes, this is Carolyn Cohn. As the trustees know, Northern Trust is the custodian bank for the payment of benefits. And under our agreement with them, they require that we tell them who are the people who are authorized to give them directions as to who should be paid and what payments should be made from Northern Trust. They require a resolution of the board listing those people. And they also require a resolution of the board listing people who they call authenticators. And an authenticator is a person whom Northern Trust calls when Northern Trust has a question as to whether or not the people who are authorized to tell them what to do are acting properly. So the last time this was done apparently was around 2011, and they've asked us to update our list. And so that is the resolution that you have in front of us, the resolution for the five people who can give them directions: Leanna, Taylor Cannon, Eva Crabtree, Michael Gormany, and Robin Laidson. And from medical benefits, I guess she gives them directions as well. And then the people who can authenticate what the directors have done, and that would be Leanna, Taylor, Eva Crabtree, Michael Gormany, and Joe Montagna, who's in the finance office, works under Michael. This resolution was adopted by SURF at its meeting this month. The same resolution.
Any questions here?
I have a question, Trustee Rivera. So you stated that this last was adopted in 2011. So is this something that we should be maybe putting on an annual schedule for adoption, or should it just be automatic upon change of staff?
The latter is what Northern Trust has requested, and I think that's fine, you know, just if there's a change, that this is continuing until there's a change.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Rivera. Any other questions? I hear a motion to approve the resolution.
Motion to approve the resolution appointing the designators.
And authenticators, please.
Authenticators?
And designators. Thank you.
So Trustee Nunez moved that we approve the designators and authenticators.
Second.
There's a second from Trustee Rivera. Trustee Cannon, how do you vote?
Yes.
Trustee Cousin?
Yes.
Trustee McDermott?
Yes.
Trustee Nunez?
Yes.
Trustee Rivera?
Yes.
And I'm a yes, that item passes. Item number 3E, update on group form to consider criteria to waive income earnings cap. This is the item that we've discussed previously, and maybe I'll turn it over to Carolyn or Leanna for kind of a summary of what's been discussed and considered.
Thank you, Mayor. This is Carolyn Cohn. A small group was formed, and it, the mayor appointed the members of the group, and that included Trustee Cannon, Trustee McDermott, myself, Leanna, Catherine Lamar, who's the Deputy Corporation Counsel, and the mayor. And we were formed to discuss what criteria should be considered by the board as a whole when determining if the income cap should be waived. And just the background on that is that, as everybody knows, there is a provision that employees or retirees who have fewer than 13 years of service and are under the age of 65 can request that the income cap on their outside earnings be waived. And these are retirees who retire on service-connected disabilities. So anyway, we met to discuss, and we came up with, or the Corporation Council came up with a list of 16 possible criteria, and I added one to that, and we discussed whether any of those should be adopted or considered by the board. And we really did not have a consensus on this. But just so that you know, the first criteria was length of service. I think there was a sense from the mayor that if somebody had longer service, that was helpful. I think there was a sense from other members of this group that actually shorter service might be something that should be considered, because then a person is likely not to have a very large pension. Or the portion of, I did not explain the cap correctly. So the cap is, or I didn't explain it at all. The cap is that you cannot have, if you have your outside earnings and your retiree pension exceeds what your former salary was, then you get a reduction by the excess of your pension. So that's the cap that's being asked to waive. And in order to waive that cap, there must be a letter from the fire chief addressing that the person basically was injured in the course of their employment. And from the, in the case of police, the letter has to say, meet four specific criteria for the kind of injury the person had. So going in, the person is fewer than 13 years, under age 65, and they have this letter. So then what do we decide whether or not the cap should be waived? So length of service was one of the criteria suggested. Impact of service-related injury and ability to earn income post-retirement, that was suggested by the Corporation Council, but we didn't quite understand what that meant. Ability of applicant to earn income post-retirement, such as advanced degrees and special skills, we weren't sure what that meant either, so we asked Attorney Lamar to go back and give us some more information on that. The next one was, did the applicant retire while under investigation for disciplinary violations or pending disciplinary hearing? There was not consensus that that should be a criterion. The next one was, we considered, was disciplinary history. There was a sense that if that were to be considered, it should be only disciplinary history when sustained, but there was no consensus that that should be one of the criterion. The next one was commendations for service. The sense was, if we were going to look at that, we shouldn't be really looking at commendations, but maybe overall job performance. But there wasn't a consensus that we should be considering that. And then the last one was the nature of the incident during which the applicant sustained the service-related injury. I think there was a consensus that that was a criterion that we could look at. The other two issues we discussed, and I think we have consensus on those two issues, were that if somebody wants to have the income cap waived, they should file an application to do so. And then the last idea was when, if it were granted by the board, when should it become effective? And I think there was a consensus that it would be effective in the month following the trustees' meeting. So other three members of this group want to weigh in on what I've said or have.
Trustee McDermott or Trustee Cannon?
Well, I mean, I think that we definitely made some, you know, some strides in that meeting, just as far as getting things out there to be considered. But, you know, this is a pretty significant shift from the way we've been doing things. And, you know, to make sure that we're going to make this change right, this is going to be something that's going to take some time and have a lot of things to consider. You know, I know, if we're instituting a policy, we have to run it through through the attorney for the union to make sure that we're not violating anything with our contract, and really just to make sure that we have an airtight plan. I mean, I think the whole purpose of having this meeting and putting this plan together and putting something on paper to give us guidelines is really to try to avoid problems in the future. And, you know, this is not something that's just going to get ironed out after, you know, one 45-minute meeting. So what I would like to do is to be able to have another group session where we could, you know, take another look at this and see if we can make any more progress.
Appreciate that. I think it would be helpful for the other trustees to just hear some of, you know, given the list that Attorney Cohn outlined for folks, helpful to hear some of your thoughts, Trustee Cannon's thoughts, and I'm happy to share mine as well on some of the items that we had consensus on and some of the items that we had some questions on. I don't know if you Trustee McDermott or Trustee Cannon just want to share some of your thoughts on that, because that'll bring other folks up to speed and then we can get a little bit of input from them so that when we regroup, we have a little bit more wisdom to share.
I just want to reiterate everything Brian and Ted, Trustee McDermott. I mean, we need a little more time and I would like to bring this to my attorney. I don't believe I made that committee meeting. So I would need further time myself.
Some of the issues that we addressed there, you know, I definitely see where the intention was coming from, and some things I believe were very well intentioned to put in place there. You know, considering, you know, a firefighter or a police officer's track record of employment, you know, who they were, what they gave to the city, what they gave to the job. However, we have a different perspective from being on the inside of sometimes that, you know, who is a good and dependable coworker versus, maybe a problem or an issue. And some of these things that were, I'm all for trying to, you know, reward and making it easier and giving incentive to someone who's been a good and faithful employee to the city. You know, one of the things that we've dealt with is one of the things that Trustee Cannon and I were on is, you know, the with the commendation issue is sometimes, you know, the issue of official commendations. One of the things that I brought up is that with the New Haven Police Department, as a supervisor, I've put in people for commendations. And I mean, it's kind of a timely process of paperwork to make sure those people get awarded. You know, myself over my career, any commendations that I've received have mostly been put in by the same supervisors I've had in the same windows of time, just because those supervisors took the effort and took the initiative to actually put it on paper. And it's extra work with no extra gain for that supervisor. Some just can't be bothered. So if you've ever been fortunate enough over the course of your career to have a boss who's willing to take that time to put it on paper, then it looks like you're an all-star.